Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Nancy?
Yes. Hello. Is this Jason?
It is. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
Good. So we're already started, so all I have to do is just introduce you. How do you pronounce your last name? Sindler?
Sindelar.
Mm-hmm. Sindelar. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let me go ahead and introduce you, and then we'll just go ahead and start talking.
Great.
All right, here we go. All right, everybody, I am back, and we are talking with a very special guest because she's talking about one of my favorite authors, Ernest Hemingway. And when I tell you a little bit about her, you're going to understand really, really quickly that she knows just about everything that there is to know about Ernest Hemingway. She is the author of Influencing Hemingway, The People and Places That Shaped His Life and Work. She's made numerous presentations about him, and in 2014, she was a keynote speaker at the Hemingway Festival in Sun Valley, Idaho. Welcome to the show, Nancy. How you doing?
I'm great, Jason. Thanks so much for inviting me to join you.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. And like I said, Hemingway is one of my favorite authors. I've been reading him since high school. And I've even read some of his poems. You know, I know a lot about his work, but I don't necessarily know a lot about the man and what has influenced him into doing his writing. You know, there's always that influence, no matter what you do with an artwork, whether it be, you know, culinary or fine arts or even authors. So kind of tell me a little bit about Ernest Hemingway and let people understand how intense this man really was.
Well, he was a very interesting man and had a fascinating life. And in writing the book and just researching the places where he lived and worked, it has just been great for me to write on his coattails, the coattails of his life. So he was born in Oak Park, Illinois, and he was very much influenced by his father and his grandfathers. And to start with his grandfathers, both of them were veterans of the Civil War. And they believed that war was a venue for men to display honor and courage. And when Hemingway was very young, he knew both of his grandfathers very well. And they were both very proud of their background in war. So when Hemingway was finished with high school, he went to Kansas City and he worked for the Kansas City Star for a while. But as soon as the Red Cross came through and they were recruiting ambulance drivers for World War I in Italy, Hemingway jumped at the chance to do that. And that was really a huge turning point in his life, to leave the conservative Midwest and go to Europe and be in Italy. And he learned that World War I was not the war of his grandfathers, in that, you know, soldiers were being injured was they were sitting in trenches as opposed to, you know, being killed by a saber wound in a battle. And so he created a code for living. How do you live in this modern world? And that really was kind of the basis for all of his novels. So his grandfathers were very important influences. And then his father was also a very important influence. His father was a medical doctor, and the family spent their summers in Michigan. And this is where Hemingway learned to hunt and fish. And his father taught him the skills for those sports. And so in northern Michigan, they were fishing for trout and pike and smaller fish, and they were hunting for ducks and squirrels and smaller game. But these were skills that he really enjoyed his entire life. So later on, when he had more assets, he would go big game hunting in Africa. And, you know, he went on a very famous safari in the 1930s and killed rhinoceroses and lions and a lot of big game. And that was very exciting to him. And then later in life, he lived in Key West and also in Cuba. And, you know, this is where he learned to fish. And he would go out and he'd fish for 400-pound marlin, and he would catch, you know, several. I mean, the quantity of fish and game he was able to down is just amazing. And both of these these hobbies, these sports, were very thrilling to him. So these fathers and these grandfathers put him in these situations where he lived this very adventuresome life, and he was very interested in how people faced adventure, how they faced dangerous situations, and how they faced death.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It sounded like it just got cut off there. I'll edit that out. So, okay. Now he's kind of used these things. How does he use it to his advantage? And starts. When does he become a writer? When does he really start to write his stories? Because I noticed that it was like in the early 20s. Was he still working at the Kansas City Star at that point in time?
Well, he went to Oak Park High School, and he had a journalism teacher his senior year in high school that really encouraged him to write. So before he even graduated from high school, he wrote 3 short stories, and he was also the editor of the school newspaper. So his parents really wanted him to go to college. His father and grandfathers, his whole family, had been college educated, and he decided no, he wanted to go off and be a writer. So when he finished high school, he felt he had the skills, and he was able to get a job at the Kansas City Star. And so he went off after high school as a cub reporter for the Kansas City Star. So that is his first writing opportunity. And then when he returns from Italy after World War I, he has the opportunity to do some more writing for the Toronto Star. And so he gets his start in writing as a journalist for these different newspapers. And then the Toronto Star sent him to Paris in the 1920s. And he's doing freelance writing or writing for the Toronto Star on a variety of topics. But this is where he begins to see what life is like in Paris, and he gets the inspiration to write For Whom the Bell Tolls, or excuse me, Sun Also Rises, and he starts that book out where the characters are in Paris, and then they go off to Spain. And it was during the Paris years that Hemingway really became interested in bullfighting, because a friend of his says, let's go to Spain, and this is where he learns to love the bullfight. And the bullfighting really kind of ties in with his other interests in life, in that the bullfighter is showing grace under pressure. The bullfighter is facing death. And so a good bullfighter draws the bull very close to his body, kind of works with the bull, and then very precisely kills him. And he is showing this skill, which is athletic, it's also courageous, and it's also, you know, the bullfighter is facing death, because the bull obviously can win the battle. So Hemingway, because of this interest in war and because of this interest in a variety of looking at men in tough situations, becomes fascinated with the bullfight. So his writing starts in high school, to get back to your question, works its way through journalism, and really throughout his life he supports himself as a journalist. And then his first book is Sun Also Rises. His first novel is Sun Also Rises, which is incredibly successful. And that is based on his experiences in Paris and in Spain. And A Farewell to Arms is based on his experiences as a soldier and as an ambulance driver in Italy during World War I.
So how does, you know, I know as an artist myself, and I've been doing it for a long time, you know, having the family support was very important. You know, back in that time, you know, family was everything, you know, and you took really what your family said and you took it to heart. A lot of them went to work for their fathers, you know, and their grandfathers and everything else and became apprentices. So for him to reject that and do what he wanted to do, how did that play a part in his life, and did it make him try to be even more successful to say, look, I told you so? You know, how did that work for him back in that time?
Oh, Jason, that's a great question. His family was very supportive of him as a child and as an adolescent, and they were proud that he was a writer, certainly through his high school years and the early years as a journalist. And certainly the education he received in Oak Park really stood him well in his efforts to become a writer, because he really understood the classics. He studied the classics in school, and his father and mother also had all the classics in their home. And the father was very strict. He expected his children to be doing something, to be reading a book or doing something worthwhile. There wasn't any just sitting around. So Ernest was very well read and very much supported by his family. However, when he wrote Sun Also Rises, he really was going into new territory, because he was writing about prostitutes and people who were promiscuous and people who drank a lot, and he was showing the dissipation that was going on in Paris after World War I. And his style of writing and his content was very new at that time, incredibly revolutionary, and his parents were absolutely shocked. So one of the things I did for the research for my book was I read a lot of the letters that went back and forth between his family and Ernest. And his mother called Sun Also Rises the filthiest book she's ever read. And his feelings were hurt because they didn't support his writing. I think he wasn't too surprised, because his parents were very conservative, very religious, from a very conservative Midwestern town. But they did not support his writing, because he was moving forward into subjects that were taboo in Oak Park. And he would write back and he'd say, you know, I want to write about everything, not just the beautiful things, but the good, the bad, and the ugly. And his parents weren't quite ready for that. So there was a split there. However, you know, the support and the love that he got, you know, for the first 20 years of his life certainly gave him the self-confidence that he was able to move on and be very successful.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I first got my first big break, and it changed my life forever. Obviously, that book was a big success. So how does he take that and, you know, basically outdo what you last did and make it even better? And make, you know, because that's one of the hardest things that any artist or any author has, is to outdo what you just did. And when it's already a success, it's tough. So how did he come up, how did he do that? You know, what was his inspirations to do the next book and basically beat himself out?
Well, that's a good point. He was very successful at a very young age. And so he wrote Sun Also Rises, then he wrote A Farewell to Arms. And Farewell to Arms was also very successful. So then he gets kind of a lull in his career. He went back to Spain and he wrote Death in the Afternoon, which still is the definitive book on bullfighting. But there were a lot of people that were not really very interested in Death in the Afternoon. You know, they looked at bullfighting as this blood sport, and it was not a bestseller. And then he went back to Africa and wrote Green Hills of Africa about his safari experiences. And that also kind of was flat, and that made him very unhappy. So there were periods in Hemingway's life when he either was not writing or when he would get bad reviews, where he would go into periods of depression. And so he had, you know, these successful novels and then some that weren't so successful. And then he would, after that period, he was in Key West. He was living with his second wife, Pauline Pfeiffer, at that time. And he left this very soft life to go to Spain to get involved in the Spanish Civil War. And again, he was he went back to newspaper writing, and he was a correspondent for the North American Newspaper Alliance, and that became the basis of For Whom the Bell Tolls. And so he, you know, he gets himself into the middle of the action, and he again is successful. And then there's a lull. You know, he has some other books that aren't so good, and one of the books that really was panned by the critics was Across the River and Into the Trees. And it was after that that he then writes Old Man and the Sea, for which he received the Pulitzer Prize. So there's no question in my mind that writing was the most important thing to Ernest Hemingway. He constantly was pushing himself to write well, write in a different way, and to find subjects that would be new and interesting. And when he wasn't writing, he was unhappy. And when he didn't write well and things were panned by the critics, this made him unhappy too. So if you look in his letters and you look at his personal life, there are highs and lows. Just because of what you said, you know, I mean, he had great success as a very young man. And that is quite a challenge, because he was constantly living his life to reach that high level of writing and acclaim.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I heard a quote one time, and it really was profound to me. It says that passion is the key to make people do amazing things. And no matter how good or how bad his work was, and I'm not saying it wasn't good, but, you know, it just wasn't as successful, you could still see the passion behind it, you know. And that was one of the things that I've always been inspired by, people like that. You know, they're passionate about what they do, and they never let anything, you know, get them down for too long. And that's something I've always tried to you know, live by with my own work. You know, I've had highs, I've had lows, I've had you know, scathing critiques. So I can relate to them, you know.
Yeah.
And it happens, you know.
Right.
So let's kind of talk about a little bit more about some of his later work towards the end of his life in the 1950s and 60s. Where were some of his other inspirations that came to some of those later works that he performed before he passed away?
Well, all of his work is very experiential. He very much wrote from whatever he experienced, whether it was, you know, Sun Also Rises, Farewell to Arms, For Whom the Bell Tolls was his experience in the Spanish Civil War. Old Man in the Sea was based on his experiences in Cuba. And I just came back from Cuba, and I actually met one of the fishing buddies of Hemingway in Cuba. And, you know, so when he's describing the shark attack on the marlin that's caught by the old man in Old Man in the Sea, this is something that Hemingway would have known about. And, you know, the details of the boat, and first, you know, he's hitting him with different pieces of the boat, and finally he's, you know, puts his knife on the oar, and then at the end, you know, he puts a knife on the tiller, and he's constantly beating against these sharks. And so Hemingway is writing from his experiences in Cuba. And, you know, I think probably the last thing that he was working on was A Movable Feast. And it's a memoir, and it goes back to when he was first in Paris. And it's a very sentimental book. But even that is based on his personal experiences and his first marriage to Hadley Richardson. And he had found some notes and things that he had kept were found in a trunk at the Ritz Hotel in Paris. And he was absolutely delighted to have those notes, because they were reminiscent of a very happy time in his life when he was young and in love with Hadley and in Paris and making his way as a writer. So when he wrote Movable Feast, he was at the end of his career, and he was trying to write about the good times in his life. So, I mean, it's sentimental and it's positive, but it is a memoir. One of the things that happened towards the end of his life was that he was suffering from depression. And he was on a lot of medication, he was drinking a lot, and he had also had, by that point in his life, 6 or 7 concussions. And so it's speculative as to what actually caused the depression, but Mary, his fourth wife, took him to the Mayo Clinic, and this is where he got electric shock therapy. And one of it, which is the at that time, and I guess to some extent it still is, the cure for depression. And the electric shock therapy erased his memory. So even though he had these notes and this wonderful motivation to write Movable Feast, he struggled writing it because he had trouble accessing his memory. So he had tried to commit suicide several times, and finally he did. And it's pretty much because of memory loss, because he was so depressed that he couldn't write. And writing was the most important thing to him throughout his life. So there's a quotation that I like where, you know, he says, you know, when writing is the most important thing in your life, only death can stop it. And that's what happened to him.
Wow.
So the death is kind of, you know, obviously it's a culminating experience, but he was very knowledgeable about guns. And what he did was he took his favorite shotgun and he went into the foyer of his home in Ketchum, Idaho, which is near Sun Valley, and he put the butt of the gun on the floor and he put his toe in the trigger and he pressed his forehead against the barrel and then pressed the trigger with his toe. And when he was first found, his wife said, "Oh, it was an accident." But anybody who knew Hemingway knew he wouldn't have an accident with a gun. He was just too knowledgeable about it.
Right. Well, you know, we're just on the last legs of this. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left. So briefly, kind of, because you've talked to people that knew him, what was he like as a person, you know, from their experiences? What would they say if you went up to him and asked him what was their idea of what he was like in life?
Well, women were very attracted to him. When he was young, he was very handsome. And so the cover of my book has a picture of the young Hemingway on it in Key West. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, he was a womanizer. Well, the women liked him, too. So he was, you know, married 4 times. And I'd say certainly his second wife and his third wife very aggressively went after him. So there's that piece. Also, he was very outgoing and very much the storyteller. So this comes partly from his youth, where he was very learned about the Bible, and he believed that the Bible was, you know, really the art of the narrative. And so from a very young age, he was a storyteller. So people really liked him because he would always, you know, kind of have a story, always have something to say. And I guess the other thing that I would say is that he was really liked, and he had friends from all walks of life. All of his major novels were made into films, so he was friends with a lot of movie stars, Ava Gardner, Ingrid Bergman, these beautiful women, as well as people like Cary Grant. And Gary Cooper was a very good friend in Sun Valley and one of his hunting friends. So he was friends with the rich and famous, but he was also very much loved by the Cuban fishermen. Very, very simple people. Very simple, somewhat impoverished, and they loved Hemingway. And I was just in Cohamar, which was the setting of Old Man in the Sea, and when he died, the fishermen in that town melted the propellers and the anchors and things from their boats, and they made a statue of him that overlooks the town, just out of things from their boats, because they liked him so much.
That's awesome. Now, tell everybody how they can get your book, how they can find you, and how they can, you know, just correspond with you.
Well, that's great. I would love to do that. Well, my book is called Influencing Hemingway, and it's available on Amazon.com. I also have a website, nancysindelar.com, and I have gone to libraries, community groups. I've given lectures really now all around the world. I've been to Paris and to Venice and to Cuba 3 times talking about Hemingway. And I think one of the things that makes the lectures popular is that I have all these pictures now. I have pictures of his wives. I have pictures of his homes. I have pictures of him hunting, pictures of him fishing. I have seen Hemingway in situations that are amazing. So when I give a talk, I really am going through all of these slides. And they have been very well received, and I'm happy to do that. So people can contact me at my website has my email address, but I'll tell you it's nancysindelar@aol.com.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for coming on the show. We got about a minute left. So, you know, I love that we've been able to learn a little bit more about the guy that has been so influential in literary arts in the United States and across the world.
Yeah, he's an interesting person, and I've enjoyed researching his life and talking about it. And I think one of the most interesting parts is I can say I've been in all the places where he lived. I've stood in the room where he was born and in the room where he died and all the places in between. And he was quite the man.
Thank you so much for coming on. I enjoyed this. And everybody, stay tuned because we're going to go through some commercial breaks, then we'll be back with some music. So, you know, just relax and join us again. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, right. Jason.
Thank you.
Okay.
And I will get you a link to when the thing will be up. I believe it's not going to be this coming week. It's going to be next week.
Great. Thanks so much. I'll look for the link. Great.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.